When you're lost in the darkness, look for The Pod. Specifically, the Prestige TV podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network, where we're breaking down every new episode of HBO's The Last of Us. On Sunday nights, grab your battery and join Van Lathan and Charles Holmes for an instant reaction to the latest episode.
Then head back to the QZ on Tuesdays for a deep dive with Joanna Robinson and Mallory Rubin. From character arcs to video game adaptation choices, story themes to needle drops, we'll parse every inch of this cordyceps-coded universe. Watch out for mouth tendrils and follow along on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi everyone, welcome to Writer's House. Hope you are all safe and well. Today we're going to talk about the Let Girls Play campaign. Karine Diacre dismissed as France manager, then chat some Europa League and a bit of Chelsea. And my guests are Flo Lloyd Hughes
and Moaya Quadri. Ladies and gents.
It's Rice Crash.
How are we?
The kids are back in town.
Escov Juniors.
Escov Juniors have assembled.
I feel like I'm amongst my peers. When I'm in, when it's you two, I feel like, yes. It's like when I go into my daughter's world. It's just like, I love going into the 10 to 13-year-old world and just act up. I watched This Is 40 again with my missus last night.
I haven't watched that in ages.
It's amazing. It's amazing. So before we go, I've got to deal with like, the Gary Lineker stuff, man. Because that's my guy. He wrote a tweet criticising the government about everything that's happening with the human rights issues and everything here. And it's the perfect distraction for this government, man. Gary's tweet was the headline news, bro. It's almost like you were saying, Flo, when we were speaking, it's like they need Gary Lineker to distract everybody. Because for me, it is a human issue. It's not political. You know what I mean? They've got no empathy. The most vulnerable ones are always the ones that suffer. And they're the ones that suffer. And it starts with words. I think Gary Lineker, he retweeted from a German professor about, because the Hitler thing is what they're all jumped on and everything like that. But he retweeted saying that it all starts with language. It starts with words. They didn't just start throwing people into concentration camps. It starts with words and language. And what they're doing again is like the culture war they want us to all have. Left versus right. Wokery. Oh, you're woke. You're woke. That is the distraction. And this, I'll tell you something. If they do, BBC, get rid of Gary Lineker, I'm out. I'm gone. I'm not staying there. On his own platform, he should be able to say what he wants to say, right? Gary Lineker, he says stuff on everything. And it's almost like this one's kind of missed everybody simply because he says so much. But this, he's so right with what he's saying. I've spoken to Gary. I'm behind him.
It's a bit infuriating because there's so many times where, as you mentioned, Flo, it's a distraction. Where all of this clamour happens
against each other all the time.
And in the background, what's happening, they're pushing through things that should never be pushed in. Mm-hmm. It reminds me a little bit, obviously, it's a very completely different situation, but with the Rashford stuff, Oh, you can't mix football with politics.
Exactly.
You can't do this and that. Oh, wow, if things were done properly, he wouldn't have to be doing
Absolutely.
What he's doing.
Absolutely.
And kids would be fed. So it's very concerning that we're always in this situation where... Brexit was the same thing as well. There's like a big hurrah and circus. And in the background, all of these things that are affecting real people's lives every day today are just being pushed through.
Pushed through, bro.
Very, very concerning. But I mean, I totally understand where you're getting from. Because at the end of the day, like, it's just someone using their platform to
speak
about.
He's an easy target for them, Flo. He's a easy target for them.
Yeah, and I mean, also, we have to say credit to him for using his platform too. Because like you said, Ian, he does engage in a lot of discourse on Twitter about politics, about the government. And he has been quite outspoken in the past, but I think we've seen other very high profile people in his position not do this. Mm-hmm. And we know that there are issues around BBC employees and the way that they want their their employees to behave and, you know, not tweet about things. But he certainly feels like he needs to speak up on this. Yeah. And massive respect to him for risking quite a lot in order to do that. And they have said that they're going to stand by him. And he's taken a lot of heat, not just online, but in person too, like being hounded outside his house by reporters.
Reporters wanting a comment on a tweet.
And like you say, that's not what the issue is here. It is a distraction and it plays perfectly into the hands of the government, because leading the 10 o'clock news on Wednesday night was BBC talking about the BBC and Gary Lineker and nothing about the government's policy and how it is a conversation about human rights, it is a conversation about dignity, about people's lives. And that is the conversations we should be having. And, you know, credit to him for speaking out. And hopefully we'll see more of that.
Nice one, Gary. So, guys, let girls play. The biggest football session ever put on happened again the other day with Let Girls. Did you see?
The videos were so funny.
Last year, there was 90,000, right? This year, 270,000 girls.
That's amazing.
Right? And it was, when I went there, Flo, like, you should have seen them in there.
They're so cute.
Honestly, and they're so good. That generation was coming. All it does, it infuses you, it galvanizes me to say, these girls are not going through what them girls went through. And that's all I was trying to say, but the participation, the fact that I will stand by the fact that if the girls do not win the Euros, we are not here. We're not here, right? And I don't think that they understand, those girls, the enormity of the achievement that they've done. They cannot, because I remember the Norway game, Flo, us beating Norway 8-0, and then, you know, everybody's like, that's when everybody was like, yeah, well, you're supposed to beat. Because we didn't start the tournament great, you know, in the way we were. But then, bam, all of a sudden we beat Norway 8-0. And everyone's like, yeah, well, that's what they've been doing. They've been beating people 20-0, 10-0. Not realising the significance of what's going on in our own country with our team against a very good Norwegian side that just got peppered that day. But then we played Spain the next day. And Spain, they were sauteing us. Yeah?
Cooking.
They were cooking us. And I was thinking, if we lose that game...
That's it.
Yeah. If we lose that game... And at the time, I wasn't thinking that. It's just as it went on. And then when we won, I realised the enormity of the Spain result and then to go on to win it. Because I genuinely believe that this all doesn't happen. How everybody's now, the government are involved. Obviously, Barclays have been involved for a while now. Mm. But now it's happening. It's got momentum.
You're right. And for anyone that hasn't kind of been following this, because it is quite UK-centric, but the Let Girls Play campaign's been running for a couple of years now through the FA, and Barclays have been doing their bit, like you say, with a partnership with the FA and New Sport Trust to provide girls access to football in primary school, and they've pledged to, I think by next year, 2024, that every girl will have access. So the foundations have been there, which has been so important, because we know that everyone is exposed to sport for the first time at school. That's how you get into it. So you need those foundations. But in the last week, that's gone one step further off the back of England winning the Euros, which is led by Lotta Womamoi and Leah Williamson, but it certainly was Lotta's idea. They wrote to the government after they won and said, right, this is the beginning of a journey. We want you and expect you to support girls to play football. Off the back of that now, the government have announced a big, wide schools policy. And within that, there's an element of girls' access and there's also some funding for all schools, but there's also a little bit that will hopefully be targeted specifically towards girls and kind of underrepresented groups.
Yeah.
Obviously, we know, you know, we've just talked about the government in relation to Gary Lineker. We know that we can't always rely on this government to follow through on policy, unfortunately, because the evidence is there when it comes to housing, NHS, everything. But certainly to get something tangible, to get something in writing, to say that we will deliver to support access to kids in schools around football and try and demand more of schools to support girls to play football is massive.
That is
massive. And the players deserve so much credit for it, because really you need those leaders to realise in a moment, right, this means more.
And they did that. Leah, when she's the captain, she's standing there. This is her moment, enjoying it at Wembley, the noise and everything. And that is when she called to arms about supporting the game and getting to the games. Same with Lotta. They're on their way to the celebrations, and that is where it came to. We have to do something. We have to write a letter. So in their moments when they are, you like, should be like, just like enjoying it and just realizing what they've done, they're still thinking about the generations to come simply because of what they've all gone through. And this is important. And that's why the government had to come in and they have to stay in.
Yeah, and this is where for me it's so amazing because I try to think about it in totality. In the biggest moment in their careers, they're still thinking about the future.
Absolutely.
And something happened recently where NBA player Draymond Green was talking about someone and said, the dynasty doesn't start with you, it starts after you. With this current crop of players, the legacy doesn't start with them, it starts after them. Mm. That moment was the point, similar yes. to the Olympics, and everything after is the legacy. So to secure this is amazing, but it makes me think about the nature of being a woman's footballer. Mm. And when you break it down, Amy Cripps, who's deputy editor at Versus, we had a conversation about this recently, and she said something really point that really made me think. Any woman's footballer is not just a woman's footballer. They are playing knowing that loads of people didn't want them to play.
Mm.
And they're essentially activists, whether they like it or not, because they know that they're playing for something bigger than them. And that's a situation that many people would never have to deal with. No matter what match it is, what performance they are, they're always thinking about the legacy of what they're doing. And that's an enormous weight to carry. And the fact that all of them, Lotta, all of the players constantly come out and are constantly fighting for a better future than they had, is admirable and credit to all of them because it's an enormous weight to carry.
And like you say, Moira, it's really interesting you say that because Crystal Dunn from the US Women's National Team did an interview with GQ recently where she spoke about the actual burden of being in that position because through their campaign against their federation, the US Canada. Women's National Team have always talked about it's not about us, it's about the legacy of what we leave behind, it's about future generations. I think also in the context of this, it's really important to think about the fact that these players have realised the power of their platform because having worked in this space and worked for a charity that has specifically been campaigning for targets like this or movements like this, lots of people have been trying to get stuff like this actually written down for a very long time and not been able to do it. Now, it's complicated. It's not as easy as just clicking your fingers and making it happen. And we know that budget needs to be provided to schools. We know it's a lot of it is going to be put on the deliverers and having them buy into it. But the fact that it is there, it's in writing, that is the start of something. And it is now up to all of us to chase the government and make sure it happens because we know that they often drop these PR releases
in a bit of nice publicity and then they just
disappear into the distance. But it is vital that we have the influence of the government saying, we are going to really try and say to schools, you've got to deliver these minimum of 2 hours a week. You've got to try and provide opportunities for girls.
Yeah.
And it's creating that legacy, which is massive.
You know what I heard as well, just quickly on it, is that I heard, I think it was Farrah Williams was on the podcast with Eartha Pond about the teachers. And it's like you have to train with teachers who don't know what they're doing. And those are the things that the money's going to go towards, going in, training those teachers to be able to teach them.
Exactly.
And one of the points that you have to make as well is, I'm not saying this because we're just trying to hatch like a million, billion footballers. We just want girls to experience all the great things that football give you.
Yeah, it's not about necessarily just the next lionesses.
You'll find some
because you'll find some really talented people.
Oh my God, I should have seen this little girl who was there the other day.
Yeah.
She's, again, you watch her, she done everything flow. She was sliding tackles. She must have been this big. Sorry, not good for the podcast, but that big, right? Sliding tackles. She's finishing with her left foot, finishing with her right foot. She was passing to her teammates at seven, which I cannot remember doing when I was seven, passing to somebody else. And she was helping and working, and she was the best player, and she was helping everybody.
But right, this is the elite ones.
Did you pick them out? Bam.
But this is the thing. There's so many people that would have been in that situation at the age of seven. And all of the data and the research shows that the drop-off is around 12 years old because there's no facilities or not adequate training or people have a negative experience.
Yeah.
And what I hope this does is ensures that so many people don't have that negative experience or don't have that drop-off when they're 12 because if you keep going, you're more likely to stay in it.
Yes.
Flo, you know from people that you've played football with and the amount of clubs popping up in and around London, so many people have had experiences where they played when they're young, by the age of 12, drop off. And then in their early 20s, realize, I really enjoyed playing football. I want to get back into it. Mm. How do we ensure that that drop off rate reduces significantly and we can keep this pipeline going and hopefully not only have more people playing football sports, but have a more diverse pipeline as well, because ultimately that's another issue as well.
Yeah, we need to be doing something about secondary school.
Yeah,
you know, once they get into secondary school, so this can't be just for the girls between 7 and 12. We need from 12 to 16
yeah.
as well. So those things need to be put into place as well, and that needs to go into those secondary schools as well.
And also, like you say, lots of people just want to have fun,
exactly.
And I think it. We obviously talk about the really talented next generation, but it's about getting people moving more than
exactly.
anything. It's about showcasing the joy of football, because not everyone is going to go and become a professional footballer. Very few people are going to be able to do that in this world. But it's about showcasing the joy of football. I know PE and sport can be quite a traumatic experience for a lot of people. Mm. And, you know, a lot of us were blessed with really enjoying sport because we were quite sporty people. But it's not the same for everyone. So it's also about engaging with girls and saying, how do you want this PE and sport to be delivered? How do you want this football? Like, let's talk to young people and find out from them what they want. Because I think the system right now, like, so many kids do drop out, not just girls, because everything is delivered in such a structured way that you don't open those communication and say, like, let's just have fun.
It's a beautiful thing. It's called let girls play. Like, girls it's just play, about man. Playing and enjoying
the game. Even with that let girls play, the only thing I can think of is it's going on to be a footballer and playing football and doing it at professional level. And then kind of reaching what you want to reach and your dreams and everything. I only think back to a time where, let me see, when I was 12, if somebody said, can't play no more.
Yeah.
I don't.
What would you do?
You can't play no more. So this is what I always say to people. I cannot, like, I'm with someone like Kelly, because Kelly Smith was my, I spent my day with an inspirational lady on International Women's Day. And that was with Kelly Smith. And Kelly Smith, and we've seen what she went on to become, one of the greatest, she's one of the greatest women players we've ever produced. Kelly Smith literally had to beg, steal and borrow and find just to find football. And look what she was. Look how great she was. Mm. Look how many generations of women like that we've lost. Mm. So we owe it now. The government and everybody owe it to the generations of girls that's coming, that never happens again.
Yep.
And that is why, again, it comes back down to, I think that the Euro finals and winning that is Georgia Stanway's goal against Spain changed the world. Changed the
world. It was a sliding doors moment.
It was
honestly
a sliding doors moment.
Because without that,
I don't think this happens for
I don't think, yeah. You're right.
I don't think it happens. So well done, Georgia Stanway and the girls. So Flo, Karine Diacre, she's gone.
She has gone.
What was the official line?
So obviously it's a French translation. So there's kind of, you can interpret it how you wish, but they talk about everything in context. So they keep mentioning this word context, and they basically came to the conclusion. So for I'll provide the context in this case, but Karine Diacre, head coach of the French women's national team. She has been a controversial figure, shall we say, for a very long time. A lot of players have come out ever since she came in 2017 and said that she created a toxic workplace. Mm. It wasn't a nice environment to be in. It was just had bad culture. Mm. So ever since she came in 2017, there have been issues, and lots of players have spoken out publicly about what they believe those issues to be. And then it all kind of came to a head over the last couple of weeks when Wendy Renard, who has been the captain but was stripped of the captaincy at one point under Diacre, came out and said, I'm not playing the World Cup anymore under these conditions. I need to preserve my mental health. Two of her teammates followed suit, Kadidou Tiani and Marie-Antoinette Katoto, who's currently recovering from an ACL injury.
Yep.
At this point, the Federation obviously think, I don't know what are we going to do? But all of it as well was centered around the future of Noah Legrat, who has recently just stepped down as president. So he was having his own controversies and allegations around sexual misconduct and bullying. And so that was going on. So he ended up leaving last week, and he was due to leave at some point, but it was unclear until he then left last week. So then the pressure kind of mounted because he was her greatest ally in the Federation. So after that happened, it really felt like, okay, she's going to have to go.
Yes.
She won't have a choice. But then on Wednesday, she doubles down and releases a statement via her lawyer, which says that there's a smear campaign against her. It's a disgrace. It's a distraction from this team's preparations. But the French Football Federation meet on Thursday, and the executive committee essentially says, we've made the decision.
Yeah.
We can't continue because it's impacting the team. And we believe that going forward, we need someone else. Now, they also did call out Renard and her teammates for the way that they voiced their disagreements via social media. I'm pretty sure they've gone the
they must
traditional
have gone the traditional channels and
they
no one's listening.
They have in the past and no one's listening.
Especially if the guy, what's the guy's name, the boss who had a...
Noah LeGrat.
Right. Especially if he's at the helm and he's only gone, what, last week? So you have to look at it and think then, Mayos, is that they've probably gone everywhere they need to go. The only place left to go is put it out there.
But
I've got a different point. No one's listening.
French culture is about, if you look at the moment, they're protesting about the change in the retirement age. Like, it's a known thing that if you have an issue, you voice it, they vocalize it, and that's one of their strengths. So I don't think you can look down on footballers used as in their own platforms to call out something. And yeah, fair play for them to
but
do.
But this is why it's so good that you have a platform like that. We mentioned it earlier on with Gary Lina. You're supposed to be able to say what you want on your platform.
Yeah.
If this is what's happened with the women now, that they've got to the stage where... And when you look at her and when you see the players, they don't look happy. They don't look happy. You could just feel there's a kind of a submissive kind of vibe about them, oppressive kind of vibe about them. And when you look at the French team and what they should be doing, if they were playing with freedom and joy and without worrying about their mental state, this team should be cooking everyone.
It's alarming when, you know, such a big figure in their camp, captain, potentially last World Cup, final swan song, says, you know what, that's not worth my time. I can't do it.
Yeah.
That is, if that doesn't send alarm bells, I don't know what will. The fact that she's had to come out and say, I can't do this. I cannot have my final swan song because of the environment is crazy. And it feels like sometimes football is one of these only environments where, like, where is the HR? Like, why is the HR department not doing anything? Really alarming. Again, when you look at women's football, it's the case across so many of these top teams you speak about all the time. Why is this emotional abuse is such a prevalent problem in women's football at the league level, and it should not be.
But then we were talking about this on Counter Press yesterday, because what's so frustrating at the moment in the women's game is exactly that, is that we see managers dismissed constantly in the men's game, right, around issues of losing the dressing room. And Jesse brought this up on Counter Press yesterday. And for some reason in women's football, when the dressing room is lost, federations double down and dig their heels in. Spain,
and believe the manager.
France have been doing this for years until now. Like
Canada.
Canada's slightly different because it's not around the manager, but it's around the federation. But similar, you know, they want change and the federation dig their heels in.
Yeah.
So why is it in the women's game, you know, the players, they just don't have this power to enact change, when in the men's game, if a whole dressing room turned around and said, the person in there has lost us, you've got to get rid of them,
and
which we see regularly, they go.
Do you want, do you want the truth about it?
Yeah.
And it's the sad and annoying fact of it all. When you look at the decision makers or people that are in the decision makers, like we said here, they're still men that think they have power over women.
Exactly. The ego and the sexism and everything, it just ekes into it all. And they say, no, we know better for you.
Exactly.
Not you.
You know, I just can't wait for the day when women, because even this morning I was looking at the news and Chris Sinclair was on there talking about everything that's going on with the Canadian Federation and stuff. I can't wait for the day where these top players and these women do not have to constantly be on some soapbox fighting for something. Just play, like we said, just let them play, let girls play.
Janine Becky, Canadian women's player, was at Man City, now playing in the NWSL in the States. She was in the Canadian Parliament yesterday with some of her teammates talking about this issue, speaking very well. You know, she was hitting every single point, every single note. She should be focusing on
football,
the World Cup. She should be focusing on pre-season for her domestic league. She shouldn't be in Parliament having to fight for this stuff. France have a home Olympic Games on the horizon, and this is why which almost pushed the federation into making this move, because they mentioned that in their statement, is that we need to be doing better, and we've got World Cup and Olympics on the horizon, and we don't want to be embarrassed essentially on the world stage.
No, it's crazy. It goes back to what I was saying not too long ago about women's footballers go into this occupation knowing that they're more than footballers. The weight of, and it's not, I don't know if it's the weight of responsibility, the weight of that people think that I should not be in this position. People don't want me to be in this position. And ultimately, I don't want people to go through what I went through. It's not right. Like, they should just be able to, like you said, go into their careers and enjoy their careers.
That's it.
I can't imagine the amount of, it would be so great to do a survey and ask so many of these top level players, are you enjoying your career? A lot of them will probably say, I enjoy the football, but I'm not enjoying the moment because there's so much around it that distracts me away from what I want to do, which is really sad. But I just hope now that this move enables all of the players to move forward. It gives them a sense of power and understanding that they have a platform that they can utilize. And ultimately, I just hope that Federation makes the right decisions in terms of who they bring in now. Because you've got a chance to move forward. Don't make a decision that's going to take you 10 steps back. Don't mess it up.
That's what the Canadian Federation are doing at the minute. There's no transparency. Christy Sinclair is saying they don't know anything. They don't know where the money comes from. They don't know where the money goes. You know, it's like when you read the situation of the training facilities, the fact that they've got coaches having to train them to make up numbers.
It's bizarre.
A team that's like an elite football team. You know, you just think to yourself, what is going on? Again, it comes back down to people who are running things. They're not good at what they're doing. They're poor at their job. And so what's going to happen is it's all going to just come apart. And then you've got people, right-minded people who say, no, this can't happen. We can't stand for this. This hasn't happened. But then fortunately, they have got a platform. And then it is up to people like us to keep the message going, because otherwise they just think, like the Canadian Federation just think, okay, let's just keep it going. Let's just see it out. No, we can't let these people see it out. We can't let them see it out. And I just hope that the women just fight on. Hope they could just play football without having to fight all the time. Jesus Christ. Before we go for a break, can we talk about Alyssa Thompson? I heard a lot about her just coming through and how great she's going to be. And was that like 5 minutes into her debut? Was it?
Yeah, so it's technically her first professional goal, but because it was a friendly, I don't think it'll really kind of count statistically. But there was a friendly between Angel City and Club Americas ahead of the NWSL season starting. And a ridiculous solo goal. She picks it up just in front of the halfway line and then just goes through maybe like four defenders and goes around the goalie. Yeah. But the best is the touch around the goalie, because she kind of slows down and does that nice little bit. Quick acceleration round, bang. Everyone was going crazy on social media because she is highly rated. She's been called up to the US Women's National Team. She did come for the game in October. I think she came on in that game for England. Against England. And I think we may see her in the US World Cup squad. She's very highly rated.
Well, the thing is that what you're just hoping, because the American women team are very good.
Mm.
But as soon as they get somebody that's coming, there's a massive amount of hype, man.
Yeah, and the league have just sort of changed the rules as well to allow like high schoolers to be drafted, because we haven't seen a lot of them, but they've adjusted the rules over the last couple of years to allow for more of that. And I think there was a 15-year-old just drafted recently, which is insane.
They're gonna have to
Thompson was the number one pick going in, and she is extremely highly rated. But it's wild.
Yeah, but the thing is that what I love about it is that she is highly rated. There is a lot of like potential in her, and there's a lot of expectancy from her. And in 5 minutes, she scores a goal I like that. So it's going to be, I'm going to be really interested to see how it moves forward for her, simply because she's going to need to be managed
she's
going
to be protected
because
as well.
Like, she's getting a lot of hype. She's scored an unbelievable goal, and now you just want to make sure that she's managed right.
Yeah,
because if she is, and she's going to cause some problems.
What a way to announce yourself, though.
Yeah, man.
way to announce yourself.
But she burst on the scene. That's how that's how you burst on the scene, man. That's how you burst on the scene. Europa League last night, man. I liked it.
It's a fun tournament.
I still don't like the theme song, but honestly, the football, what I saw yesterday, I thought was pretty good. It's good to see Man United the way they came back, and seeing Bruno just like, you know, just say, uh-oh. I better fix up, bro. Never seen a man change so quick. He was very, very good last night. I give him that. I was very pleased that Vigo scored his goal last night.
Wait.
Because, like I was saying, I get the vibes that with Vigo, it feels like he's on a great holiday and he meets a wonderful lady in that, but it's only gonna last during the holiday. And it's kind of coming to the end. So he's just having the most amount of fun he can at the moment. I was desperate for him to score yesterday, and he's doing everything to miss what I saw. I said, come on, man. Vigos, man. Make it happen for yourself. You're playing for Man United out of nowhere. I don't know where it's come from. But I was so in his corner. So when he scored, his celebrations. Did you see his celebrations?
Oh, he was reduced to tears.
Honestly, it's just, you don't realise what it means. I was really pleased for him. Anthony's goal was great.
Yeah.
But like,
Rashford's goal was the best goal.
No, the best goal was Ayoze's goal. Yossi Perez's goal was
beautiful. I preferred Rashford's. I prefer Rashford's because I do think with Perez's one, it goes through so many bodies. It's an unbelievable strike right into the bottom corner. It's like pinpoint accuracy,
right? This is what I'm talking about.
But the way it goes through so many bodies just makes it so difficult for De Gea to read, for the defenders to read.
No, Flo, you're missing.
But the way Rashford's finish into the top corner just
blasting with anger.
Yeah, that was an angry goal.
Rashford's
so
good. I love it.
He had his hot shot Amish boots on. He had rockets in his boots. He just blasted it. The thing was,
can't believe we lost to Liverpool.
I know. Bam, that was like an anger goal.
Yeah.
Because the Yossi Perez goal, Flo, is the way it came and the way the ball bounced, the technique of it, he had to hit it. He had to hit just the outside. And when you see where it went in the goal, Flo, it was perfect. It's one of those that you think, oh, you're doing training. You say, I'll never get the opportunity to do this in a game because we don't get this situation. It was perfect from the angle he was. When you watch it from behind the goal flow, you see it bends outside the post. That's where you know that he's got the angle right. The goalkeeper's probably got his angles right. There's probably somebody maybe in front, but he's not saving that because it was hit with, it was such purity that he's not going to,
it was clean. Honestly, it was clean.
And then when you see where it went in the goal, you can see how clear it was. Brilliant. I thought they played very well last night.
They needed something. I love the Europa League because there's so much, like, not randomness, but I think it's competitive. It reminds me a bit like the Championship. You just don't know what to expect because there's loads of fixtures on and you're just taking a bit of everything. And for me, the Union versus Union game ended 3-3, which I'm sure Ryan was... Yeah, the perfect Union. I'm sure Ryan was happy about it. For me, what stood out was Juve Freiburg, which is a very competitive game as well, considering where both teams are on the table. And then I'm seeing Di Maria pop up with a header. And it just made me realise, especially his performance in the last round of fixtures where he scored a hat-trick. Di Maria is one of the best wingers of this generation. Is not spoken about enough. He is honestly such a superb footballer and he's still rising to the occasion for that team. So that's why I love Europa League, because you look at it, it's like, oh, I forgot you were playing there. Mm. Oh, this guy. Like, I love the, and the music's great. You've got, whoa, 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 come on. Right.
Yeah, but Carl always does but Carl has that video from The Sopranos and he's in the car and it's on Carl's Instagram and he popped it in the group chat last night and it just gets me every time because the way that the beat moves.
Yeah.
With Tony Soprano is just so good.
So good.
I'm actually getting into that song now. I thought it was kind of cringe before, but I'm actually kind of... The video just does it for me now.
I love it. We're not Arsenal going to rest players, bro.
It's funny.
They did rest a couple yesterday, but it was still a slightly shaky show.
Yeah, but you know, why is Saka still...
I know,
honestly,
he needs a rest.
I don't... This is what I said. I put it in a group. I said, he must have a clause in his contract saying, I have to play every game. Because I'm thinking to myself, that particular game, surely you might give him a rest in
Leave
that game.
Leave him at home.
Might give him a rest in that game. Let him just chill. But like, you know, Mikel's on record as saying he doesn't want any of his players thinking one game or one tournament is more important than the other. Mm. I totally get it. And that's his managing style and that's what he's doing. And we're seeing it because Saka's playing. But at the same time, it's very precarious for me.
I'm going to ask you something now, and it's been a while since I've done this, but you know, you've seen it all, you've been through it all. From your perspective, when you were playing and as a player, did you ever think to yourself, I need a rest here just to keep, or did you just want to play every single game and go for it?
It's a different time as well, mates, because them times you had to be playing continually so as you can score continuously. So you can play continuously. Mm. I always feel sorry for a striker that gets taken off with 10 minutes to go if it's 1-1, if it's 0-0. You know that deep down that manager's not really got any faith in the fact that that guy's going to score a goal. So back when we were playing, it was a case of you have to be playing. So that's why you wanted to make sure that you're scoring goals. So I scored this week, so surely you can't leave me out. That is literally how you're thinking. That's how I'm thinking. I have to score. I have to play well enough. I have to be the one that the manager doesn't take off. Even when you go down to 10 men, you know, they take a striker off. I never got taken off. So I used to take that as, yes, they believe that I can be the one that can still work this line and maybe score that half chance goal, which I did against Newcastle. Sorry, everybody.
What did you say? Talk about your own belief. I don't care about Newcastle. Come on.
No, but it just came to me. No, but Flo, it just came to me as I'm thinking about
you're not match the day right now.
No, but no.
Alan Shearer's not here. It's okay.
It just came as I was just thinking about the whole goal and the way we played. Tony Adams got sent off and we beat them 2-1 in the end. But what I'm saying is, back in the day,
I don't need the receipts.
We don't want.
I'm sure
it's on YouTube somewhere.
Okay. Called the winner.
I'm sorry. So just to answer your question, no, I didn't want to be taken off. I didn't want to be rested.
Good to know. Anyway, back to the Europa League. I would say I'm getting slightly concerned about Arsenal defending set pieces. Well, they're looking a little bit rocky. Right.
Only last night with Matt Turner.
But it's not. Turner didn't come to claim that, and he should have done.
Yeah, but there's talking. There's talking that's got to happen, and there's got to be confidence that you have in your goalkeeper.
Yeah, you've got to be a leader there.
It didn't seem that they have.
You've got to call it. You've got to shout. You've got to tell your defenders what you want to do. But I just feel like there's a little bit of slackness coming in
really quickly. They seem very vulnerable on the break at the minute.
Sporting should have had that game sewn up. So well done to Arsenal for getting a point. But Maya, I need to ask you.
Go on.
I don't know what you're crying about because Chelsea are really good. So I need Chelsea fans to get a sense of reality because I was at Stamford Bridge on Tuesday night and they are a good side. I don't know what all these amateur dramatics.
You're saying that as a QPR fan that's about to be relegated. It's a very different dynamic here. Do you know what it is with Chelsea?
I thought, especially Kovacic.
That front three, Kovacic had a fantastic game captain on Tuesday night, but that front three... Sumptuous.
Do you know what it is with Chelsea, right? I think you have to, context is key in everything. But if you look at the last year or so from sort of, your owner's got to go.
Mm-hmm.
A new owner comes in. Mm-hmm. You don't know any idea of what's going to happen in the future. Mm. You then get investment. You then think to yourself, okay, is everything going to stay the same or we're going to go forward? New manager out of nowhere. There's been so much that's happened. And you have to remember, Chelsea are always used to a place where even if there's like, ebbs and flows. Mm. It's never too mad because you know we're going to win a trophy soon.
Yeah,
I think if we don't win the Champions League, this will probably be the first time in we've gone two seasons without winning a trophy.
Wow,
for a long time, and we've not had a lot of luck. And it's the fact that we've been in a situation, especially in the league, where the form's not been great. But Spurs have been slipping up. Newcastle have been slipping up. Liverpool have been indifferent.
What do you mean you haven't had luck, though, Mio?
In terms of the performance, like for instance, against Dortmund, first leg, great performance, you get hit on the counter. In this game, this second game, the fact that you had two penalties, the fact that Sterling manages to get the ball to drop back to him after the missed kick and score,
it's meant to happen.
Those sort of things, it's
that
meant
luck,
to happen.
Yeah, that
little bit of, you know what,
we story need something written, else. Yeah, yeah.
The
we
story
need,
we've written for yeah. you is that you're going to win today. That was the first time we scored two goals since December the 27th.
Wow.
It's the first time we've had back-to-back wins since November, I think. And it's just about, can you build something from here now? Because we've just struggled. It's not like we've not got the right personnel, but we've just struggled to do anything.
Did you cheer Graham Potter when he was doing his clock pumps?
I was happy for him. I was happy for him. Especially because of the Leeds game and this game, you could see a manager that is fighting
was
for his
relief?
Job.
Was it relief from
it
you?
Was relief for him because he was thinking to himself, I can't be the manager that gets knocked out of this.
I know.
Not going to win anything. It can't be on me. At least if I get knocked out in the next round, it's something different. It's quarterfinal. But you could see it, the substitutions, and we spoke about this for the group, the substitutions he made in the Leeds game and this game. It's the manager saying, I've got something here. Let me try and protect it.
Mm.
And then the game goes a little bit cagey because it's probably not the best substitution to make. But you can't fault his effort. And one thing I would say is, in previous times with Chelsea, when we've had moments like this, you look at the players and think to myself, the players are not behind him or they're down in tools. I saw players fighting. Mm. I'm not seeing the players
what
actually
What Kai Havertz said after the game, he said, this guy is the man.
Yep.
And that felt like, right, these players are certainly behind him.
Jean-Felix before the game, where he was like, no, with the pressure, there's no pressure on us because this is our job, but we have to go out there and perform. It feels like they know that this is a weird situation, but the manager's trying and they need to try harder. And I was just so happy that everything came together in that game because... I know Dortmund have had tricky times in Champions League, but let's call it what it is. That team had won 10 games in the bounce. If you compare that form to Chelsea's, any team going up against that team would have think we might be.
Confidence is confidence.
So now, can you build up on that? I think 11 points is too much to claw back in the league. I think it's way too much given how late we've left it. But can you go on a run now? Can you do something?
You could see that team going on a run.
The fans sort of get behind you and it's like, you know what? It was a tough year, but... we ended on a high. I think that's all Chelsea fans want. We just want to be just want to win.
Well, also, I feel like the building blocks have been there for a while. In the first leg against Dortmund, in lots of other games, they've created a lot of chances. They just haven't finished them. And it was like that again on Tuesday because who was it that hit the post? Havertz hit the post. Sterling had multiple offside opportunities. Havertz scores that goal and Sterling's offside for that. There were so many chances that it just has to fall eventually. At some point, that's got to go.
Scary. Do you know what's really scary is this is the same thing we were saying underneath Thomas Tuchel a few months ago. And it was like, we've got the chances, but they're still not. Well, it's like we've been cursed.
There's something about that Raheem Sterling, because remember, you know, I'm nervous, and I put it in the group. I'm nervous when he's playing at Chelsea. He's somebody that, like, it's like when I used to watch Sean now. You're just nervous for them because you know that the groans are coming. And, you know, I felt like the groans were coming. And even when that shot came across and he totally missed it with his left foot, but then for some reason it bounced in the right way. And then he was able to finish it. Honestly, I was so happy.
It felt huge.
It really did.
Honestly,
it felt huge for him.
I was
as well.
Relieved because you genuinely being there, and I know you've watched them a lot this season at Stamford Bridge. I don't know if it's like that every game, but it certainly felt like it was just tense.
It's
because
tense,
the
man.
Expectation on him is so high, and because of where they are and what's happened, they need something to happen. And the crowd are just almost on his back from minute one. And I just hope that goal does relieve a lot of that tension.
It's a big goal for him because ultimately, I think, when he moved, I came here saying that for him, it's his moment to sort of own the team. And sometimes you have to look at the bigger context of, you know, individuals, footballers and teams. For a lot of individuals, right, that are watching Chelsea, they've seen more of Raheem Sterling than they have of Mudryk, Madueke and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So for them, it's like, we know what you can do. We don't know these guys. Mm. We actually know what you can do. So it's like, please, Raheem, you've done it for Pep. You scored last minute goals. Please save us.
But the way he's playing, Mayor, he's still trying to do the stuff he does.
But it just feels
like anything that goes wrong feels like, oh God, here they go. It just feels like that's,
you're right. And it's the difference of environment. Because at City, you can make a mistake, but you know the chance is coming again. With Chelsea at the moment, it's like, you need to be a saviour. You're not in the squad all the time. Mm. You've come back from injury and you're offside all the time. What's wrong with you? You wasn't offside with Pep. There's so much. It's like, you just have to let him bed in.
Yeah.
Let him bed
Please,
in.
Chelsea.
And he's such a good forward. I mean, if we're talking about his calibre, I think he's four goals away from being the top Englishman goal scorer in the Champions League. He's such a formidable footballer. And I just think it's hard for Graham because there's so many bodies there. And I don't know how many players you had to train with when you were training back in the day. I know it must be difficult. It's probably like a PE teacher running a class of 40 kids and you're trying to make them all be interactive at the same time. But can we go on a run for the end of the season? Can he build what he thinks he's 11 is, and ultimately, can he galvanize a happy camp where everyone just fighting for the same purpose?
I think he can, especially when you hear it from the dressing room. So you'll hear Kai Havertz say something. You'll hear Kovacic say something. You'll hear Sterling. You can hear, and the same message will come out. You know what I mean? Because like they're hearing the same
all together,
thing.
It's
exactly.
A union.
That's all I'd say, man. I want the league to have the teams. I want Chelsea to be doing well. I want Liverpool to be doing well. I want City to be doing well. But because the league will be better. But that's all I would say with Chelsea. You know, it's when I'm watching the tension, just all I would say is give a brother a chance.
My final point is, Mikel Arteta, wherever you are, thank you so much. Because when Graham made his remarks, Mikel came out and said, it was very different, but winning is everything. I had to win my two games. I had to make sure.
Yes.
And what did Graham do? He beat Leeds and he beat Borussia Dortmund. So, Mikel, wherever you are, thank you for your advice. We really appreciate it.
Manifesting.
Mikel's what a man. What a guy.
He's even helping other people.
Honestly,
in this time.
Man.
Okay, kids. I mean, sorry. Okay, Mayowa. I'm going to have to say goodbye. I'll see you soon.
See you soon.
Nice one. Thanks a lot, guys. Listen, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you again next week. Yeah, that was pretty good. I really enjoyed that. So we'll do it again next week.